Good evening. Welcome to the Salarian Report. Today is January 16th, 2020. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me for Money and Markets this week. On the website, I wanted to make sure you're on the weekly email update list. We send out an update telling you what's going on once a week. Make sure you're on the list if you want to be. If you don't want to be, unsubscribe. I discovered that a significant number of subscribers hadn't gotten added to the list, so I made sure everybody was added this week. And so if you've unsubscribed and got back on, I apologize. I just ask that you unsubscribe again. We also have added a tip section on our homepage. We find as we handle customer support that certain issues people run into, and it helps to give out those tips. So check out the tips. It'll be in the weekly email update as well. I hope it makes it easier for you to navigate the site. Events, we have a workshop in Basel. I thought it was on the 22nd, but I think it may be on Saturday, March 21st. I'm waiting to hear back from Thomas Meyer. That's Bach's birthday. We'll celebrate. I think it's pay at the door, so you can just come, but I'm checking with him to see what people want to reserve a space, what they need to do. We have now signed a contract with a venue for a Saturday in Montreal on Saturday, June 6th. And we're working on venues in the Milwaukee area or one of the lakes near Milwaukee in Wisconsin, and then in the Amarillo Lubbock area in Texas, both for June. So we're hoping to do Montreal and Texas and Wisconsin all in June. So as soon as we have those dates, we'll let you know. And then, of course, we have a few spaces left for the Lake Constance Hang in August. And that's Lake Constance, where Switzerland, Austria, and Germany meet. It's heaven. If you have any questions about that after you look at the website for it, let customer service know or send them to Ask Catherine. Wrap-ups. Will ESG turn the red button green? Our first quarter wrap-up hard copy has been mailed this week, and it's on its way to you if you're a premium or a print plus digital subscriber. If you're digital only, it'll be available to purchase at the store. We'll have it up. And it comes with that special insert on JP Morgan Chase that shows all of their settlements for unethical or illegal behavior in the last, it's about 20 years. It's amazing. Anyway, both of those are available in digital form and PDF in the magazine PDF on the website. So we've had those up for a while now. And then I hope that State of Our Currency will be coming to you next. So that'll be on its way by the end of February. So we're catching up on the wrap-ups. Our theme tonight is what is a common law right of offset. I've mentioned it a couple times recently in the last couple months, both on some internet shows as well as on the Salarian Report. Common law right of offset, you can easily look it up on the internet, is when you offset one debt or obligation against another owed directly by a third party. So I told the story when I finished the litigation in 2006. I owed one of the big New York Fed member banks $14,000. And at that time, I had the missing money up to $14,000. And I wrote them a letter and I said, you owe me $14,000 because I hold the New York Fed member banks responsible for illegal transactions. So I owe you $14,000 and I'm asserting a common law right of offset and collecting the $14,000 you owe me as a taxpayer. If you have a problem with that, please contact me or my attorney, and I never heard a word from them. So there you go. This week's My 21 2020 campaign poster. If you haven't checked out our weekly posters, they're absolutely fantastic. You can link, there's a little section on the homepage. You can link to them, and I tweet them out every week. And every week I have pinned at the top of my Twitter feed the campaign poster for that week. But this week is a thirsty taxpayer in Flint, Michigan, suggesting that the citizens should assert common law right of offset up to $65,000 per person to fund a new water system for Flint, which I think would be a great idea. In theory, you can do a common law right of offset against New York Fed member banks, in my opinion, as well as for federal taxes. Would a court recognize or affirm it? Maybe, maybe not. The ideal way is you get the courts to affirm it. You use state or local courts and get them to affirm it before you do it. There's also things you can do with mortgages, and I talk a little bit more about that with Marie McDonald. We recorded a great interview on mortgage servicing, which will go in February. To me, the ideal way would be to set up an escrow with a legislatively approved vehicle, and you file your tax return, mail it to the government to deposit the money in the escrow. with, again, a notification of the deposit to the federal government when you send them a copy of your taxes. And then pursuant to the legal agreement that's been created for the escrow that creates the escrow, a portion of the money goes to the U.S. Treasury for interest on the federal debt, and then a portion goes to fund the U.S. military. And then the rest will remain in the escrow for local expenses traditionally funded by the federal government. I don't include in that the Social Security Trust Fund or different pension funds that have their own unique funds and purpose. I'm talking about sort of the general fund expenses by the federal government. And essentially you say to the government, we're going to keep that money and we will manage those expenses, obligations, and requirements here. And until and unless the federal government comes into compliance with the both, and that's past compliance and existing compliance with the financial management laws, we're going to continue to do this. Essentially, what you're doing is you are asserting lawful management of that money. And what you're saying is you can't manage that money illegally anymore. So this would involve reengineering a significant portion of the cash flows. And you'd want to engineer these cash flows so that the local businesses and the creation of local jobs increase significantly in a manner that will reduce unemployment, reduce welfare, reduce food and housing subsidies. Don't get me started on the food program, because land, good land lies fallow. People who could be farming that land are not doing it. Meantime, we're shipping in food from thousands of miles away. It makes no sense. Anyway, many opportunities there. Many years ago, I tried to interest attorneys in helping me design some model templates. That's really what we need. And I'm still interested in doing so. If there are any attorneys interested in trying, there's a lot that needs to be worked out. As we watch Second Amendment sanctuary towns and counties spring up all over the country, it's now up to 418. If you haven't seen this phenomenon, it's great. It's almost a play on the sanctuary cities that were started to protect different immigrants by some of the different cities. And so now we have Second Amendment sanctuary towns and cities. It's something for those groups who've now organized to really make sure that constitutional law is enforced within their jurisdiction and protect themselves from federal or state government that's trying to violate the Constitution. But it's a logical next step, because ultimately we cannot keep paying taxes or buying products and stock from corporations that are destroying our health and safety. You can't finance your own destruction and think you're going to make it. So if we want real solutions, we have to stop financing the people doing this, whether it's, again, buying their products or their stocks or paying them taxes. So this gets back to the red button story, which implies you have to switch the cash flows. It's a good reminder to take a look at that insert on JPMorgan Chase in the ESG. It's in the link that's in the subscriber notes to the ESG wrap-up. JPMorgan Chase had record profits, and a lot of that was trading profits, and I'm sure a lot of it came from the repo game. So we're just literally printing them profits, and they're turning around and using those profits to engage in so many things that are harmful and hurtful to all of us. And yet, I still know many people who maintain a bank account or a credit card with JPMorgan Chase. It doesn't make any sense. It looks like the Fed and federal credit mechanism has gotten gamed again. And as I always say, crime that pays is crime that stays. So one way that we can do something in making sure that crime doesn't pay and reasserting the rule of law with regards to government money is to start to figure out how we can assert a common law right of offset, because I believe the law is absolutely on our side. I spent 11 years litigating the federal government's right to create a common law right of offset. So I've heard a lot that the Department of Justice has to say on the subject. Money and markets. I'm working from the Wednesday close, and I'm talking total returns for year to date. So we've only had, it's January 16th, so we've only had 16 days in the year. And it's going gangbusters again. We're reaching more new highs. Inflation is pouring into the market. The U.S. dollar now back up. It's up 1.08%. I talk a lot tonight in the equity overview about whether it's going to continue in its upward channel or really break that trend line and fall out. So to me, this is the most important chart, and it's one I'm going to watch very, very carefully. but I talk a lot more about it in the equity overview. Fixed income, TLT, the long treasury up 3% already for the year. The intermediate up 1.27%. The bond aggregate up 72 basis points, junk up 58 basis points. I'm convinced across the markets, bond stocks, FASB 56 is the biggest contributor since October 2018 to making sure these markets hold and, if anything, are flying. You combine FASB 56 with another QE through the repo market, and I think it says a lot about how JPMorgan Chase is getting record profits, BlackRock, and other big New York financial institutions, too. You know, think of the Fed as basically wheelbarrowing profits into the repo markets and they then into Wall Street. There's no doubt that there's a squeeze coming in the corporate bond market. And given the unprecedented amounts of money that the Treasury has to raise or, you know, put into the Fed, it's going to be interesting how that squeeze goes. So it's not important to see Treasuries outperforming the corporate bonds so far this year. Equities, the S&P now up almost 2% for the year. The home builder is still flying, up 3.82%. This is pretty remarkable given the 2019 performance. You would expect them to take a little breather, but they haven't. The Dow is through the 29,000 line, and that is a very important line. Europe is flat. It's down 7 basis points, the VGK ETF. Germany up 1.12%. Yeah, 1.12. Developed markets up 63 basis points. China large caps. China's doing well. 2.15%. It's clear the market likes the what's happened with the U.S.-China trade deal. And then the small caps. So large caps up 2.15. Small caps up 3.68. Emerging markets up 1.81. And then the commodities down just a touch, 1.16. Commodities look very attractive, and I talk about that more in the equity overview. Gold, which I think will, you know, had a good year last year, and I think it's going to have another good year this year, up 2.55%. If I won the lottery tomorrow and was putting new money in, gold would definitely be at the head of my list. I've always said it's a great core position, but I think this year it's going to be a good investment because it has a floor underneath it that nothing else has, in the sense that you've got central banks around the world that want it, and it's going to double up as a currency in certain places at certain times. The developed and emerging market stocks, the U.S. stock market has continued to outperform all the other markets by a significant amount since 2008, and certainly in a very dramatic way in 2019. So there's no doubt that really excellent companies in the developed markets and some emerging markets look very attractive, or emerging markets, local debt look attractive if the U.S. dollar doesn't hold. If it stays in that upward channel that I talk about during our equity overview tonight, then the U.S. market advantage could continue for some period of time. But as I say in the equity overview, we're clearly still in the planet equity bull market, and it's got room to run. Anyway, but I'm going to go slow until I see which way the dollar goes. If the dollar softens, then there's a real opportunity to take advantage of the places where there's much stronger long-term growth than there is in the mature economies. Silver up 78 basis points and gold down, oil down 5.98%, almost 6%. Top stories. The news is explosive. And this happens when you get significant change because of the whole way we've run the geopolitics, trades, and relationships is really changing, and institutions are coming apart and new institutions are coming up. And then, of course, you have technology engaging in creative destruction and insane creation everywhere. So we're going into a period where the news and the headlines are just explosive, and they're going to get more so. Story number one is there's some pretty serious players who are squeezing the president in the United States for profit. And war, you've got, you know, and they've got teams on both sides of the impeachment, and there's no doubt they're squeezing the president hard. We see a lot of pushback related to the assassination of Iranian General Soleimani. There's so many different allegations multiplying around, both on the assassination and the plane that subsequently Iran shot down, the commercial airliner. You have so many institutions in the mix who must, are required, or are professional liars, that you have a wolf-wolf problem, which is if you look at most of the sources of information about these issues, you know, none are trustworthy. And so typically in situations, what I like to do is piece together lots of information and then find the redundant patterns that make sense given the politics and the economics. But you could have a full-time job figuring out what is the truth of the situation. I believe that if you look at who's squeezing Trump and squeezing him with the impeachment, they are trying to start a war with Iran. There's no doubt about it. And Trump doesn't go to war. Trump knows that that's a bad idea for both political reasons and business reasons. He's a, you know, fundamentally business people would rather make money than go to war. The politics over the assassination has been fierce, and a lot of people have discovering the joys of being the guy who takes responsibility on the line. The UK distanced itself from Trump and the assassination, the British foreign minister on TV saying, you know, the UK is going to have to go its own way. The US is no longer trustworthy. The secretary of DOD basically said, after Trump had said that Soleimani was working on doing things that would compromise security at U.S. embassies, the Secretary of Defense said we had no specific evidence to suggest that that was true. Then Netanyahu tried to backpedal and say it was an American, was American action, and what a creep. And then things got to the point where Trump then said NATO should help in the Middle East. Wow, that's a major expansion of scope. What came out well was all parties are now pushing for a new U.S.-Iran deal involving Russia and China. So you bring all the different parties to the table. With the first phase of the China trade deal done, Trump's in a let's make a deal mode. And if you could get everybody to the table, that could be a very good thing. Whatever squeezing they've been doing of Trump, the biggest squeeze is ahead. Nancy Pelosi signed the articles of impeachment this week, and it's clear they didn't have much of a case. It was very weak, and they have worked hard to put together more of a case and vet the impeachment managers. They've appointed 7, and they've arranged for a complimentary stream of historical allegations and issues to come out. Now, if you look at how this process works, you do your hearings in the House, and then the witness taking and the investigation is over, and then you go to the Senate, you go through a process, but you don't open it up again for more investigation, which is what they're now trying to do. And the result is a serious furball. You've got a few Republican senators saying they want to hear from witnesses. You've got Rand Paul rightly ready to pull a sort of Rambo to stop them. Because this is, it's really an outrageous violation of process, and there's no doubt about it, they're going on a fishing expedition. And if there's one thing this country does not need, it's a fishing expedition. If they had something to get out on the record, they should have done it over in the House. But I think the real dirt is about to fly, and if you look at where they could go, there's plenty of real dirt if you're going to get into the real deal. And they seem to be kind of sneaking into some of the real deal stuff. But to a certain extent, it's projective identification because that you're attacking other people for what you, in fact, are doing. If you watch Pelosi sign the articles of impeachment, I'll bet you any amount of money she got a great big signing bonus for that. So whether it was her offshore accounts or net worth, they went up a lot after she finished signing it. It was very cute because McConnell basically said, you know, if this is a serious and solemn thing, you don't have pens made that you hand out as souvenirs. It's really case. Actually, McConnell's handled this pretty well. He said, let me just read it. Senator Mitch McConnell on Tuesday knocked talk of calling additional impeachment witnesses, arguing that Democrats want the Senate to, quote, go fishing during the soon-to-start impeachment trial. Quote, if the existing case is strong, there's no need for the judge and the jury to reopen the investigation. If the existing case is weak, House Democrats should not have impeached in the first place, McConnell said from the Senate floor. Anyways, we'll see. There's going to be a fight over this next week, and we'll see what happens. If you look at how the fishing expedition right now in the media and sort of the leaks are going, it looks to me like they're heading into real deal stuff, which will be very interesting if they start to open up the real swamp, because, you know, Pelosi's swamp is going to be ugly too, as is, you know, many of these guys. Anyway, The big question is whether that the people behind the scenes can really squeeze Trump enough to start a war before November. Let's see what happens. Let's hope that doesn't happen. The most productive thing you and I can do on the impeachment is give it as little of your time as possible. If you look at the generation of kind of coverage and fur balls and disinformation and hope porn and fear porn, it's a gigantic waste of your time. And one of the big problems is you have a whole lot of people who've been lying and lying and lying, and now you got a crying wolf problem. And the other thing is, whatever happens, this process is going to be, it has been extremely damaging to the U.S. brand around the world. It's going to be even more damaging. Farrell and I talked about in News Trends and Stories the danger of the field moving fast against the U.S. because of things like this, and it is a real danger. Anyway, it's also good to remember when you look at sort of the pylon that they're doing. Let me just read you the average unemployment rate by president after the first 35 months of their term. Reagan, 9%, George H.W. Bush, 5.9%, Clinton, 6.2%, George W. Bush, 5.5%, Obama, 9.3%, Trump, 3.9%. It's hard to get an impeachment when you got unemployment rate that low. The U.S.-China trade deal, we have signed what is described as the first phase deal. To me, this is much more political. If you look at the actual trade deficits and what China is promising to buy vis-a-vis what we're exporting, yes, we've broken the trend line. We broke the trend line by Trump sort of starting this whole effort. And we've also achieved some intellectual capital protections. How much teeth or enforcement they have remains to be seen. But there's no doubt that one of the things Trump has accomplished is he walked in day one and said, this relationship has to be rebalanced, which it did. If you look at the skyrocketing deficit in our trade relationship with China, it was intolerable. So this had to get restructured. And Trump has, you know, I give him credit for having really tried. Now, the administration is basically promoting this as a very significant thing. In terms of the numbers, I don't see the numbers as being very different. I put up a link with some information for you on the subscriber link that'll show you some of the numbers. I don't think the numbers are as big as they look. The danger here is we have now entered into a win-lose model with the Chinese, and the question is, how are we going to manage that without it turning into World War III? Because there's no doubt Iran is really a proxy for the tensions between the U.S. and China, which is why I think the market is glad to take a breather. The Taiwan election went against Xi Jinping, so the clear message from the Taiwanese is we want to stay independent, and I hope China hears that because it could reduce a lot of tensions if you look at the extent to which they were bullying to position themselves to take over. It was uncomfortable. Anyway, again, check out the chart on the links on the historical U.S.-China trade deficit and realize that we've watched a real change in paradigm on many, many issues that needed to happen. One was transparency. We've gotten more transparency, nowhere near as much as I think we need, but certainly more. We've had sort of a facing of the rebalancing of the relationship with China. We've changed the slide in the military, but the military's all spread out over the globe, and the model of trying to keep the unipolar model hasn't changed. We face that we have to do something in space. I'm not convinced that the way we're basically approaching it is in a highly win-lose model. The question is, can we get out of that? And we've faced the fact that we can't afford to be the global cop and pay 100% of the military expenses without other people kicking in. So there are a lot of turns that we've had to make in the paradigm of what we're doing and how we're doing it on our way to getting to the multipolar world. And so see this as another paradigm that's sort of been cracked and changed. Speaking of big change, Putin and the emerging multipolar world, there's big news there. Putin announced this week that he's going to propose a constitutional change in Russia inviting the Duma to review and approve and sort of lead all of this. One of the problems Putin has is the economy is not doing well. In part, it's hurt by sanctions, the dependence on oil and gas, demographics. He's got more than a few things going the wrong way. And if you look at the polls, Medvedev, who's his number two, the government is not doing well in the polls, and he needs more movement on the economy. And that means moving his current guy out and bringing in a new person, but also putting himself in a position where he can continue to lead after his term is up. It's not clear yet how he's going to do that. I also suspect, and we'll see when Saker, I'm going to interview Saker for our Emerging Multipolar World next month. And so Saker will have a lot more information, but I suspect he's trying to engineer the guys out who have tighter relationships with the oligarchs and turn to the Duma so he gets more support from the people. Putin continues to be very high in the polls, much higher than the government and some of the people he's got behind him. And so this is an effort to get some real movement on the economy, get a new group in, and put himself in a position where he can lead after his term is up in 24, no matter. Let's see how what the specific mechanics are. I think part of that is if you look at the people working with Putin on the international stage, they want him in there as a leader in emerging the multipolar world, or what some people would call the new world order. So he's proving to be a very instrumental character in helping to engineer that and to engineer many of the different relationships that will help to glue together and create the new institutions that will really make the multipolar world go. And that includes currency. You know, remember, currency is a man-made thing, and it runs on tracks of legal agreements and contracts and trust. And Putin is doing a lot to build those train tracks, including for financial payment systems and currencies. So I think the international syndicate wants him around. So this is addressing both domestic needs as well as international needs. One of Putin's problems is a problem we have in the United States. It's going to be a problem in Europe. The farmers know it. It's a problem all over the world. And it's very carefully couched in other excuses, other reasons. But it's a theme that's going on everywhere, and I want you to pay attention to it. Food prices are rising significantly. If you look at the cost of food in Russia, it's one of the things I'm sure that's causing a lot of the financial and economic pain. Watch food prices globally and watch the food wars. As you know, I think the African swine flu is absolutely biowarfare, and it was part of what ultimately helped bring the Chinese to the table. The covert war at this point, I think, between the U.S. and China has been very extreme. But food is going to be, we're changing our paradigm of how the global food trade works and how global food wars work. And it's going to be very, very important for understanding not just what you're going to feed your family or yourself, but understanding the geopolitics and the financial markets. Food's just going to get more and more important. The next thing I want to talk about in terms of stories is a basket of stories that I describe as the lies are breaking down. We saw Macron back down on raising the retirement age. He withdrew his proposal. The unbelievable results of the Yellow Jackets and the strikers. I've been posting some of the videos and stories, and there's no doubt the French are both very courageous and very effective. You're talking about an extremely intelligent, courageous group of people. So it's very interesting to watch how the pension fund proposals that the French are trying are going to roll out. Another pushback we're seeing, and I credit Trump with starting this, Slate just published an article that I posted called The 30 Most Evil Tech Companies. But tech companies have gone from being fashionable despite all the terrible things they do to really being held with suspicion by a variety of people. The pushback in Europe against some of the big U.S. global tech companies is very, very significant. We see more efforts at taxation and regulation. So the tech industry is asking for it, and the pushback is growing, and I think the pushback is going to get much, much, much worse. Anyway, but for Slate to write an article called The 30 Most Evil Tech Company, and they're all on it, you know, the worm is turning on that. The third thing is vaccines. We saw the new New Jersey legislature beat back the push to cancel religious exemptions. And I posted a video and spent a lot of time corresponding about a vaccine summit that was held in Switzerland. People from all over the world through the World Health Organization came together because there is significant pushback about vaccines. And if you listen to the discussion and some of the speeches, what you realize is there is a significant absence of science supporting what is being done. And it's beginning to look like a giant and very gruesome experiment on the human population. And if you look at what came out in the discussions and some of people's concerns, what you realize is the lies are breaking down. The people involved are too sincere, too intelligent, and the lies are not very good. There was one amazing guy from Nigeria who said, you have all these different companies with all these different ingredients, and nobody's ever done any safety to see if you basically stick them all into one little child that the cocktail can live, coexist safely together. it's pretty obvious. We also see an article in Science magazine, the FDA and NIH have been letting clinical trial sponsors keep their results secret and break the law. It's so bad, you just can't imagine it. So I think what's happening is you couldn't get this kind of pushback on an issue like vaccines without literally a critical mass of highly intelligent, capable people. They're often either doctors or parents, realizing that all the pharmaceutical companies, all the government agencies, all the medical associations are absolutely not trustworthy on this issue. And that there are covert goals, coming down, dictated on high. And it really is that bad. It's hard for many intelligent people to believe it's that bad. But now that you've got a critical mass of people who are sure it's that bad, have documented that bad, have proved on multiple occasions it's that bad, I don't think you can stop it. Anyway, I was so appalled at the beginning of one of the speeches by Dr. Heidi Larson from London, who's running something called the Vaccine Confidence Project. And it's so gruesome to think that they're trying to figure out how to market something that is stalling because there's not sufficient safety science behind it to make it safe. You're marketing something that's going to hurt people. And it's documented. Anyway, I couldn't stand it. So I stopped watching and I sent her the following email. I haven't gotten a response. Dear Dr. Larson, I'm watching your presentation at the Global Vaccine Summit. For purposes of covering the summit and the issues you cover, can you please provide or publish the vaccine schedules you use for your children as well as the vaccine schedules Bill and Melinda Gates and the members of the board and executive staff of the Gates Foundation or any of the other funders of the Vaccine Confidence Project have implemented with respect to their children? I would appreciate learning where this information is available. Thank you for your transparency and the transparency of your funders. So I'll tell you what I believe. I believe all the leadership of the Gates Foundation and the other people funding the Vaccine Confidence Project don't begin to vaccinate their kids to the level of the heavy schedules that are being promoted or mandated by the different projects they're funding here. Okay, Europe and the climate change op. We see climate change very much in the center of several big issues. Europe has approved a $1 trillion Green Deal. I think what's really going on is you have England coming out in the Brexit. The Germans understand that now is a time when the EU has to come together or fall apart. And so this is their opportunity to fill the vacuum. And you're basically seeing Germany, I call this, it's the financial equivalent of a blitzkrieg. So you have all these different areas that have been devastated by austerity. And now you're going to turn on the spigot and flow all this money in, but in a way that you control. One person said, in their email to me, turn on the Hoover. It's funny, but it's not funny. This is a way of overwhelming a variety of players with money who are listening to the farmers, who are listening to the yellow jackets, and $1 trillion is going to be enough to pretty much buy everybody and everything, and it's I hate to say it, it's the same kind of financial methadone we've seen in QE1, QE2, QE3. This time it's just coming from the fiscal side, so you'll be able to target very, very carefully. And so the question is, what is this all about? What is the climate change investment plans, really? I'm going to be looking at that very carefully because I'm trying to figure out what they're really trying to accomplish other than sort of buying up the rest of the economy. It's kind of it's an invasion. It's a takeover model. You're buying people into sort of social suicide because you're encouraging them to do all sorts of uneconomic things, and you're buying them with their own money. So it really is a takeover model. And you dump them with austerity, so now you're going to pump them with climate change. And of course, Germany extending their reach with England pulling out. Needless to say, the Brexit continues. We have two more weeks until January 31st, but this is a process that's going to take a long, long time. Needless to say, the Queen has one tough job between managing the Anglo-American alliance with Trump in the United States, or dealing with Brexit, and now we have Harry and Meghan deciding they're going to withdraw from the royal family, and all sorts of headlines over that. I read the Queen's statement today on how she handled the whole thing, and you got to say, at 93, she's amazing. It's a very difficult leadership position, and it's much more important than most people can fathom, leading the Commonwealth, and it's quite amazing that at 93, she's still in there doing what is an extraordinary job. The Germans, I wanted to mention, are pushing extraordinary gold restrictions on buying gold and buying it anonymously. And it's in combination with the $1 trillion Green Deal. It's not a good sign. Second Amendment sanctuary cities in Virginia development is the next set of stories. As I said, we see now 418 towns and counties starting in Virginia create Second Amendment sanctuary cities, basically saying that they will not tolerate outside parties, whether it's the state or feds, coming in and trying to make enforcement actions which are illegal under the Constitution, under the Second Amendment. There's a big confrontation brewing in Virginia, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out. I don't know enough about what the governor is up to and who his allies are in a variety of the different political constituencies, because this is being promoted from way above the governor's office. He's simply fronting for it. So this is a very, very big confrontation, because if you look at all the games they want to play on real estate across this country, big money's coming in and big money's going to be playing. They want to pull in the guns. You can't override people's property rights if they have guns. And that's what they want to do. This one is a very, very... And if they can pull in the guns, you're going to see a lot of abrogation of retirement and other obligations. So this is important. But here's what happened. A group of West Virginia legislators got together and passed a resolution inviting any county in Virginia that wants to can suddenly join West Virginia. So counties all over Virginia could switch states and join West Virginia. Now, what the ramifications will be in terms of national politics, I don't know, but I think that's very interesting. And if you look at the extent to which this fight is galvanizing and organizing people, it augurs for potentially big changes ahead. Because once enough people realize that the government is acting illegally in many different ways and in many different situations, and they continue to fund it, you can't fund somebody who's breaking the law and threatening your property and threatening your health and threatening your life. And so as I said in the theme, this is going to come down to the cash flows. And this is why being able to assert a common law right of offset is so important. There are many of the other things we could do, but it starts with who's going to enforce. And that's why I've said the most important issue in the 2020 elections has nothing to do with the presidential election. It's who's your sheriff. Because no matter who wins the presidential election, we are looking in 2021 at major shifts, major prioritization, major moves on real estate around this country. I talked about this when I did the review of Yellowstone. You know, the Beck brothers are coming. you need to know who your sheriff is, and you need a good sheriff. I just tweeted out a video of a sheriff in Virginia basically explaining that he refused to enforce anything that was a violation of the Constitution, and the whole crowd went wild cheering. It's a very good speech by one of the local Virginia sheriffs. I put in the links a link to a book review we wrote on a very good book put out by the American Institute for Economic Research called Follow the Money, A Citizen's Guide to Local Government. The 2020 elections, if you live in the United States, or if you're in any election elsewhere, it's a time for you to learn how the money works around you, because we're going to have to re-engineer the money around us, whether it's because our government has gotten too centralized or because technology is changing everything. If we're going to re-optimize the money, you need to know how it works locally. These kinds of changes can't be led from Washington. How you re-engineer the money in Tulsa is totally different than how you do it in Brooklyn. It's totally different than how you do it in Anchorage. So we're going to have to start digging in and learning how the money works, because all the money is going to be re-engineered. And if we don't re-engineer it, the danger is, you know, all these billionaires are going to drop in from New York and Washington and re-engineer it for us, not to our advantage. So the more literacy we can have about how the money works around us, the safer we are. Hollywood and the Oscars. Hollywood has doubled down on the demonic. It just, when I think I can't get shocked anymore, they shock me. The Joker, which I have not seen, took lead. It got 11 Oscar nominations. I think the next one was The Irishman. I tried to watch The Irishman. It's basically a bunch of gangsters. After, I don't know, about an hour and a half, I just gave up. It was like The Onion did a parody on old gangster movies. Now, it's funny because I had one subscriber who complained about my recommendation of Yellowstone because it's violent. But it's violent in the way that America really is violent, and we need to know about it and deal with it. So I'm a little bit more comfortable with the violence in Yellowstone because it's authentic, it's real. It's also a great script telling a great story that goes right to the heart of the problems that we're dealing with right now. But nevertheless, I took one look at the preview on The Joker and I said, no way am I watching this. I wanted to read to you something that Cindy Adams wrote when The Joker came out. She said, when did films get so filthy? Let's discuss the filth and degradation deposited on us by the film industry. Every movie is death, killing. Hollywood mouths that are open for drugs shout equal rights, defend women, honor minorities, applaud sexualities, and then produce the horror of The Joker. What's next? A musical of the Holocaust, like a sequel to The Producers? A chorus of Jews, Hitler in the lead, Mel Gibson directing? I understand Miss Liberty allowed us artistic freedom, but West Coast movie makers live behind barricaded walls, iron gates, security guards, alarm systems. Their idea of homelessness is no weekend house in Malibu. To them, tragedy means a weak box office. These left-wingers, who only look to make money, are thrilled with this movie's success. How dare they put out such poison? Hollywood is doubling down on the demonic. I also wanted to point out, I was talking to somebody about the fires, the Australian fires, which are deeply disturbing. Another reason they're deeply disturbing is they're being used to basically attack the government for refusing to play along with the climate change op and basically insisting on science and facts. So there's a real climate change op game going that's very, very ugly. And I will say this, I've gotten a lot of emails from a lot of Australian subscribers. I haven't heard of one subscriber who thought those fires were natural. And I pointed out to them, you know, the Game of Thrones is a perfect example. For 8 seasons, the Game of Thrones have constantly beaten into us that the winner in the Game of Thrones is somebody who can deliver fire from the sky. And I don't think that's an accident. I really don't think that's an accident. If you look at how many movies in the last 10, 20 years have delivered the message, you win the war by being able to deliver fire from the skies. I don't think that's a coincidence. A note on technology. We are watching a tsunami of absolutely horrifying applications. The technology is running way ahead of society's morals, ethics, or government regulation to manage it. It's kind of out of control. And we're turning the planet into a giant physical experiment, you know, whether it's vaccines or now we saw, I just posted something this week somebody decided it was a great idea to make living robots with living cell material and robotic parts. And you look at it and you think, what could possibly go wrong? I did want to point out one technology. There was an article, and you'll find it in Science and Technology. Delta is using screen technology in the airports. I don't know the details of how it works. I'm assuming it's if you have their app. You walk up to a screen to look at schedules, and it immediately pulls up your specific individual schedule, but only you can see it. And five other people can be looking at the same screen, and they're only seeing their individual schedule. Now, they're prototyping it and talking about it like it's unbelievably efficient and useful. I want to tell you a story about why you need to beware this kind of technology. I was, if you're an investment advisor or have the kinds of SEC registrations that I've had, the SEC has your fingerprint, so I'm never too worried about giving my fingerprint when I occasionally do it. So I was a member of a big fancy gym out in California in 2012, 2013, and you signed in using your fingerprint. And then you went upstairs, and the treadmills had these pads on the side. And I never associated that with my fingerprint, you know, in the pad downstairs versus the pad on the treadmill. And every treadmill had a big TV screen, flat TV screen above it. So you had your own TV. So I'm on there, and I'm watching the news, and the news comes on, and it's about Queen Elizabeth's birthday. So it's the Queen's birthday, and as it's describing, you've got the feed in type and text going down below, and the text crosses over, and it says, Catherine, the Queen so appreciates your celebrating her birthday. And it went fast. It was not, you know, it was just quick, and I went, oh my God, I literally had to get off the treadmill and I said, did that just really happen? And I realized, yeah, it did. Because they're trying to create an intimate connection between you and whoever you're being entrained or connected to. And it was frightening. And I realized, oh, they can do that because I'm holding onto the sides of the treadmill and it's got this pad here. And I'm assuming it's all coordinated with my thumbprint. So you tell me, the engineers in the audience tell me how the technology works, but what I realized is, uh-oh. Anyway, my attitude, if you look at the tsunami of horrifying technological applications, I think the only protection against all of this insanity is prayer. But prayer can and does work. So I just was watching a video. The president put out an executive order and is directing the Department of Justice to make sure that schools can't stop teachers and students who choose to and want to from praying on school grounds. It was a very lovely video, and we'll post it. He even got an attorney from the Department of Justice to give a nice little speech about the importance of protecting such rights, and I thought, wow, that's a different Department of Justice than I'm used to seeing. Anyway, protect your time. I've warned a couple times this year, but I'm going to do it again. The danger of inflation is not just inflation on your money, inflation on your time. Please do a time budget. If you look at all the things coming at you, especially with explosive news that can waste your time, be very, very careful. The sayings I'm using for my own planning is from Jordan Peterson, put your own house in order. This is a great year to put your house in order because otherwise you could spend full time just watching other people's houses fall apart. If there's anything I can do to make this weekly commentary help you just sort of organize and distill the explosive news so that you don't spend all your time just trying to make sense of the tsunami of headlines, please let me know. It's very important to me that we do this in a way that's really helps you stay on top of what's going on in the world, but do it with a very little of your time. You know, my goal for a lot of my clients used to be, if I'm doing my job, you don't have to worry about all this stuff and you can go play with your kids, which is infinitely more important. Our hero this week is Judge Cecilia G. Morris of the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Poughkeepsie, New York. She ruled in a bankruptcy that she would discharge a law school graduate's unpaid student loans, even though he isn't disabled or unemployed, saying that satisfying his law school debt in full would impose an undue hardship. So essentially, bankruptcy extinguished a student debt. Please tell attorneys that this is possible. A lot of attorneys tell their clients it's not possible. But this is a perfect example of the lies not working any longer and intelligent people pushing back. So God bless the fellow who was a former Navy vet who did this and who had gone to law school. Anyway, but spread this information virally, because the more students we can see getting rid of their student loan debt in bankruptcy, if your student loan really was an entrapment, which many of these things were, this is very good news. So kudos to Judge Cecilia G. Morris. She clearly is in Poughkeepsie and not down near Wall Street. Much safer to be up in Poughkeepsie when you do things like this. Our blast from the past is the global harvest and what it means to investors. That was the wrap-up we did several years ago. I knew that the food paradigm was going to change. I wanted to make sure you could understand what it's been and where it's going and why. We also put together lots of tables on food stocks. I'm in the process of, every time I get a chance to add another food stock to my screens, I do, because I think excellence in food is going to be a very important asset. Anyway, the global harvest will help you understand what the food paradigm has been, what the state of play in terms of food power, food assets is globally, and where this paradigm is going. And I think having that information helps a lot of us make the changes we need in our own individual life and make sense of why those changes need to happen. And let's go to the movies this week. I want to talk about Official Secrets. It's a movie about British intelligence specialist Catherine Gunn, who leaked a memo from the NSA that requested Britain's help in collecting compromising information on UN Security Council members to help blackmail them into voting in favor of the invasion of Iraq. The invasion of Iraq has left a lasting legacy of governments that cried wolf and then doubled down on secrets. Official Secrets delivers great acting, excellent entertainment, and very powerful insights on deep state tactics. It was very close. It almost got chosen as movie of the year for 2019, and then I finally decided to go with Yellowstone because it was so much more relevant to what we're all dealing with right now and will be dealing with in 2020. But Official Secrets is a very powerful movie. I don't want to give away the ending, but there's a very powerful ending with an important message about real solutions. It's so powerful. And again, I don't want to give it away, but this is combines great acting, great entertainment, great writing, very powerful insights, and very powerful solution suggestion at the end. So I recommend it to you strongly. Our interview today is yours truly, talking through the Rambus chartology, talk about what happened in 2019 in the markets. Of course, my focus being the equity markets. What are the key issues and events that lie ahead in 2020 we should keep in mind? The big one, of course, being, is the dollar going to maintain its strength and upward channel, or are we going to see a real shift in dollar market share, including one that might go very fast? The clear message of the technical analysis, and I think of my fundamental analysis too, is planet equity is still on. We are in a bull market for equities, and I think Mr. Global is betting the ranch that you can basically securitize a significant amount of assets throughout the globe and manage them through the stock market. And if you look at Rambus's charts, Rambus outdid himself this time. It's an amazing overview. And if you look at the charts, the clear message says that the bull is on. Make sure you access the Rambus chartology and the charts at the web presentation under financial markets. It's divided into bond, equity markets, and commodities. Commodities look good as well. So I really think it's going to be a good year for gold and silver. Anyway, check out the web presentation. We also have the scenario graphics up at Get Ready, Get Ready, Get Ready, the calendar, best books for 2020, and I'll be writing up those scenarios, and I discuss them in the equity overview. Ask Catherine. Hi, Catherine. My husband chose to take his pension as a rollover IRA. Now we need a plan that would best suit our retirement years. We have both retired. What advice would you give us as we make wise decisions? We've opened a rollover IRA with Fidelity, and we will have to make decisions of how we want to invest that money that will last the rest of our lives. The first thing I would say is you shouldn't get advice from anybody who doesn't understand your unique situation. It really, for me to give you any advice, and I can't give investment advice as a matter of regulation on the Salieri Report, but to give you any intelligent advice, I'd have to know much, much more about your unique situation. If you look at the best books for 2020, there are two books under the investment category by James Montier, which I strongly recommend to anybody who's facing the kind of decisions you need to make. I think they're two of the best books that can inform investment. If you go back and listen to the last few equity overview, I go through a lot of the different issues that have to be dealt with. And we have some old seminars where I sort of go through financial planning. Those can all be helpful to you. But the first thing I would do is I would get and read those two Montier books. We also have a book called Family Wealth that I would recommend. Because if you look at investment, it's a process. And what you need to do is budget time and create a process and then keep learning. Just stick with it. There is, I just mentioned the book on local finances. We're in an environment where it's you need to not just pay attention to your own money, but you need to pay attention to the local finances around you. If you look at what's happening in some states and counties, you could get absolutely slaughtered or clocked by what's happening in the local finances. And that's why literally you may want to investigate and do due diligence on the local finances, especially if you're moving. You want to move into a place where the finances are strong, not weak. Because remember, when the finances are weak, it translates into bad and crazy behavior, like the kind of things we're watching in Virginia. Keep an eye on the federal legislation regarding IRAs. If things get bad, we run the risk that they're going to start saying that IRAs have to be invested or this or that, or convert them into annuities or do other things that compromise. So I think if you've got a lot of your assets in IRAs, you need to do that. Try to save outside of the IRA. And as I described in the equity overview, anything you can do to permanently invest in lowering your long-term expenses, you know, paying down debt, making sure your home is, you know, it's not a bad time to downsize to the minimum of what you need to be comfortable. We want you to be comfortable and enjoy your life, but now is a good time to make sure that the less exposure you have to inflation and big increases in the cost of goods sold, that happens by bringing your overhead down. Again, the more you can do for yourself, the better. I would listen to the advice in tonight's equity overview. I also put in the subscriber links a link to what percentage of my assets should I hold in precious metals. I think that could help you because I do believe people should have a core position. And because gold is, I think, is in a good position as an investment, it's also worth considering. The number one financial problem you will have over the next, say, 20 or 30 years is the lack of integrity in the healthcare system and the cost of the healthcare system. So I would be very serious about investing in your health and preventative medicine so that you don't find yourself in that trap. There's an extraordinary amount that you can do to ensure that you're super healthy and can take care of many of your health needs by yourself. But that takes real investment in education and working out a program that's good for you. So to me, if you want to avoid the number one financial risk, it's a matter of investing in health, and part of that is a really good food supply. I talked earlier about the importance of time budget and time management. I'm concerned the inflation is going to really clock your time. And the thing that causes people to get sick is they get overextended and then stressed and in the corner over time. So shadow work and all these different games around time are such. So I would be very, very careful there. But otherwise, take a listen to my recommendations and overview, see if they help. But Ultimately, you're the chairman of the board of your investments. You need to understand where your money is and why it's there, and you need to feel comfortable with it. And I think the Montier and Family Wealth books and the other books I've recommend can really help you do that. Dear Catherine, I hope this finds you well in enjoying the new year. I'm in the middle of listening to you and Dr. Farrell on the annual wrap-up. As usual, it is outstanding and thought-provoking experience. I have a few notes and questions, but I'll leave them in the comments section. I want to know about the prison system. So I got a series of questions about the prison system, and I wanted to read you what I wrote. I said, first, you have to learn how the economics work in your state. The first thing I would do is read everything I could on corrections and the history of corrections from Wikipedia. That's just to give you an overview. The next thing I would do is read 100% of the information about your state's correction system as it is publicly available, including budgets and statistics on who the prisoners are, where they come from, and what they were sentenced for. Learn how the probation system works. Get a good overview on the court systems, its budget and personnel, and how they interact with the state legislature. That is, you need a mathematical and statistical overview of the current usage of time and money in the criminal justice system in your state. You will also need a good understanding of the basic economy and who and what the criminal code is designed to protect, and what is generating the criminality related to the prisoners in your system. Then I would look at the federal prisons in your state and how they relate to the state and the state system. Then I would identify the smartest academics in the corrections field and ask for their recommendation and summary literature on the history of U.S. and global corrections and current best practices. Part of that will be finding current global success stories that can inform your thinking. As you do all of this, you will want to understand why your leadership has or has not resisted privatization and what can be done to marshal the best information and data on why that is a very good idea to not privatize, and the best information and tactics from those who are succeeding at staying a government-based system. As you know, I think privatization of correctional institutions is complete psychopathic insanity. Hi, Catherine. This was so interesting to me. I thought I'd send it along. I thought you might be interested. Then they send a story, which I've posted a link, of a teacher in the UK who's teaching children to read blindfolded and talks about, the title is, These incredible kids have been taught how to open their third eye and read blindfolded. I put the link up in News Trends and Stories, and I got additional information from Ulrich Gonegger about Russians who've been doing this. According to this particular teacher, kids up until about the age of 12 can very easily learn to read and see things blindfolded. This comes back to our capacity for telepathic information. Ulrich passed on groups in Russia, research they've done as well, one group that was teaching adults how to do it. And it's funny, I talked to somebody who knows a lot about this area, and they said, you have to be careful. We started to teach kids to do things like this, and what happened was they immediately went out and used the technology and their powers as if they were weapons. And she said, what we found is you don't want to teach kids how to do this unless they have more maturity and empathy and know how to handle the powerful, you know, because this is powerful technology. And I said, okay, noting somebody like Greta and the weaponization of young people is reminds you this can be a double-edged sword. I do think it signal, you saw the same thing with remote viewing, that the leadership depends on extraordinary secrecy, and the military-industrial complex depends on extraordinary secrecy. And if you look at remote viewing or you look at kids reading blindfold, more and more what you realize is that we have the power to basically bring total transparency to pretty much everything going on in the planet, and that's very unnerving for the military-industrial complex. I posted in the For the 2019 annual wrap-up, in the top videos, we posted a wonderful excerpt that a subscriber sent us on an interview with one of my favorite doctors, Klinghardt, and he talks about his concern that a lot of the things that are going on are meant to essentially destroy the capacity of your pineal gland to support you in doing all these things. And it's a reminder that, yes, Virginia, there is a conspiracy. Anyway, you want to make sure you check out the videos in the in the 2019 annual wrap-up web presentation. It's a great selection. I guarantee you there's going to be something in there that's going to make you much smarter. So I hope you really take advantage and digest the web presentation. We put a lot of work into it, and there's a lot of great stuff. Of course, if you want to wait until the PDF and the magazine hard copy come out, of course you can do that too. But it's there now, and a lot of great stuff, and so we hope those resources are useful. Okay, that's it for this evening. Next week, we dive into deep state tactics. We're going to be doing deep state tactics, the last big theme for the annual wrap-up. The first five deep state tactics were done during the year. You can link to them from the commentary, the web presentation, or just do a search for Deep State Tactics 101 on the website. If you haven't heard those five, it's great background for what we'll be doing next week and the week after. And then in the first week, we've got great stuff for February. But first week of February, Unpacking Astonishing Financial Fraud with Lucy Commissaire. Lucy Commissaire is one of the smartest journalists I've ever worked with, and she is a real pro when it comes to unbelievably complex financial fraud. She's an amazing woman. Anyway, so we're going to be unpacking Astonishing Financial Fraud with Lucy in the first week of February. So until next week, when we dive back into Deep State Tactics 101, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.